السلام عليكم ورحمة الله. سورة الفاتحة. حسبنا الله ونعم الوكيل نعم المولى ونعم النصير. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على أشرف الأنبياء والمرسلين سيدنا ومولانا أبو القاسم محمد. وعلى آله طيبين طاهرين المعصومين عما بعد، فقد قال الله الحكيم في كتابه الكريم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم نحن نقص عليك أحسن القصص بما أوحينا إليك هذا القرآن. صلوات
اللهم صل على محمد.
First and foremost, I must send my condolences out to Imam Zaman, ajalallahu ta'ala farajahu sharif. On the occasion of celebrating the shahadat of his great-great-great-great-grandmother, the mother of our ummah, the daughter of Rasulullah, Fatima Zahra, salamullahi alayha. It's always difficult to sit in this position, and it's even more difficult on nights like this where what is said should be even most pleasing to the Ahlul Bayt and Lady Fatima Zahra, salamullahi alayha, because do not think that those who were killed in the way of Allah is dead. They are alive receiving sustenance from their Lord, and she's aware of everything that goes on, not just tonight, but on every night. So be mindful of that, inshallah ta'ala. I began by reciting an ayat of Quran in which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has said, we narrate for you the best narrations and what we have revealed to you, this Quran. And this Quran is such that even in Sunday schools or, you know, even at the home every now and then, we read or we enjoy the stories of Quran. Even more than the rules and regulations, we single out the stories, we like them, they're exciting, they're invigorating, and this and that. But sometimes we miss the lessons in them, or we seem to have this opinion that it doesn't apply to our time. Now tonight, I decided to pick a topic that inshallah, Lady Fatima, salamu alayhi alayha, would be pleased with. And that we can also learn from. Many of us are familiar with the story of Nabi Yusuf. Many of us, you know, have watched the movie multiple times, encourage our kids to watch the movie multiple times. And after doing this, if it's asked, what did we take from it? It's like, it was long. You know, we missed many of the meanings or applications that apply to this life. And the narrations in Quran, they're not just for you to say, oh, wow, that was cool. You know, I like the way, you know, Yusuf, alayhi salatu wasalam, he was, you know, in the well and he was this and that. You know, these stories have applications for right now. Whether we're in 2013 or 3013, 5013, the Quran is applicable in the present tense. And inshallah, tonight, we'll look at the story of Yusuf, of Nabi Yusuf, alayhi salatu wasalam, with Islamic eyes. We will revisit this story with Islamic eyes and see how it applies today. So before I begin, I'm going to ask you, with a show of hands, who are familiar with the story of Nabi Yusuf? Okay. Now don't answer me, but I'm going to ask you, and what did you get from it that you can apply right now? send salawat ala Muhammadin wa ala Muhammad. Just a side note, in many cases, when it's asked to recite salawat on Rasulullah, it's for a water break, or it's for to get a recollection, or scroll up and down on your iPad. But one of the main reasons for sending salawat is that Allah will expand your heart and you will understand what is said from the minbar. That is the main reason for sending salawat. Now, when we think about Nabi Yusuf, first things first, we realize his family upbringing. Yes, two believing parents can bring forth a disbelieving child. And yes, two disbelieving parents can bring forth a believing child. This can happen. But on the regular, we follow spousal selection, because in normal situations, the fruit doesn't fall too far from the tree. So what can we first learn from the story of Nabi Yusuf's spousal selection? Because Yusuf and Binyamin was from a righteous mother, and obviously Nabi Yaqub, who was a righteous father, and likewise Binyamin and Yusuf were inclined to piety and righteousness. And there were ladies, but of the boys of Bani Israel, they were shaky in their religion, to use smooth and easy words, and their mothers were also shaky in their religion also. So the first thing we can learn, if we pay close attention, is spousal selection has a big to do with your offspring. Now, did anyone catch this by watching Nabi Yusuf? Spousal selection, because that applies today. That applies today. Spousal selection. Also, we learn from the story of Nabi Yusuf the harmful effects of hasad, of envy and jealousy. From the very beginning, we didn't even get into the main gist of the tale or the excitement of the tale. From the very beginning, what caused this chain of events was what? Hasad, jealousy and envy. So did we pick that up from the story of Nabi Yusuf? The effects, because hasad in itself is not a sin. If you have it in your mind or in your heart, it's bad, but it's not a sin. But understand this. If it comes out of you, it only comes out in what? Haram ways. Hasad, thinking it, feeling it, is not a sin, although it is bad. But if it is to come out, it doesn't come out in any good ways. It always comes out in haram ways. This is in the very beginning of the story of Nabi Yusuf. This should have been picked up. Because is this not applicable today? Salawat ala Muhammad, if it is. Don't we have too much divorce and too much misery of spouse, whether it's one or both, which is a result of poor spousal selection? Isn't this applicable today? Salawat if it is. This is just the tip of the iceberg, but now you're starting to see, wow, these ancient stories may be not so ancient. Think about it. This old tale of the ancient, folk tale, maybe there's more to it than I thought. Now to continue, we also realize the harmful effects of kadhb, lying. Lying, because when you lie, which is haram, except in selected situations, which we don't have to go in now, but for more times than not, lying is totally haram. And when you lie, what do you have to keep doing to follow up? More lies, and more lies, and more lies. And eventually, what's going to happen? Your lie's going to be proven, and now you're totally embarrassed. Because your lie, what is done in the dark, will always come to light. And this is from the very beginning of the story of Nabi Yusuf. All of these minute, intricate things that are applicable right now. One lie, oh, where is my son? Oh, well, this is what happened to him. But his shirt is not torn. Oh, it was a nice wolf. He was a gentle wolf. You know, we're familiar with the tale, so I don't have to go into details. But look at how the lie, one lie, another lie, another lie, and we are compounded with lies until guess what? Allah will reveal the truth sooner or later. You know, it may take some time, it may not take some time, but it's going to come out. And now you're totally embarrassed, totally humiliated. Who did it? You did it to yourself. So this is just, now keep in mind, this is just, I'm just warming up. These are the things that should be taken from the stories in Quran. This is why Allah says, we narrate to you the best narrations. Not just to say, oh, it's exciting and it's old back in the day. It's for us to look at things Islamically with a sincere heart, with good intentions, to take things that are applicable right now, even if it's 4,013, 2,013, 3,013, it doesn't matter, or 5,013. That's one of the mercies and one of the miracles of Quran. It's applicable right now, just like when Rasulullah, it was revealed to Rasulullah. Salawat ala Muhammadin wa ala Muhammad. Another aspect of the story of Nabi Yusuf, which is very applicable because it gives us a detailed description through application and example of how to deal with irreligious children. Nabi Yaqub never gave up on his children. Knowing what was going to happen, because he's Nabi, he still never gave up. To the very end, just like Nabi Musa, he never gave up on his children. He did his part. And those who come to my class on 11, we've discussed that. As long as you do your part, you're good to go with Allah. If you did not do your part and your children are misguided and astray, you are accountable for that. You are partners with that. Understand this. So the story of Nabi Yusuf teaches us that even if your children are corrupt, even if your children are destined for the hellfire, now obviously we don't know that. Yaqub did know that. He's Nabi. He did know that. We don't know that. But we never give up on our children. We must give them the best example until the last moment. And just like one of the children of one of the boys, one of them turned around and became mutaqi. All of them didn't, but one of them did because of the persistent and consistency of the father and continually trying to guide the children. So this is something that is very important. Now, I'm going to repeat for a reason. Salawat, if this is not applicable right now. So anyone, in brief, anyone who says these stories are just cool, you know, or fun to, you know, read just to pass the time and have no applications in the present, somebody told you wrong. Now, another thing is this. Now we get to the good parts. Nabi Yusuf was thrown into the well. We're familiar with that. He was taken by a caravan. We know his brothers sold him, and he was taken to Egypt. So now we have what? A Muslim in a non-Muslim society. We have a Muslim now living in a huge city, non-Muslim city, a non-Muslim society. Now you tell me, is that not applicable right now? Think about it. We have a Muslim, Nabi Yusuf, living in an un-Islamic society. Take your phone and look at the reflection in it, because that's you. We live in that non-Islamic society right now. Now we get to the good parts. Okay, now we get to the good parts. What the story of Nabi Yusuf tells us is what? First of all, Nabi Yusuf, being Muslim, never sacrificed his religion one iota, even though he was in a totally un-Islamic society. Salawat, three loud times if you understand. So this is the lesson, in other words, that Nabi Yusuf, the story of Nabi Yusuf teaches us, if you happen to be, coincidentally, a Muslim in an un-Islamic society, this is how you live. You still do not sacrifice it. You still fulfill your obligations to Allah, even if everybody else is not. We have each other. Nabi Yusuf had no one else except himself, and he still held firm. And notice, the story of Nabi Yusuf, when did he apply any miracles? Later on. In the beginning, through his life, he didn't apply any miracles. So anyone who says, oh, he did some miraculous things, no, he did not. Everything he did was doable. He simply lived the life of a Muslim. So Nabi Yusuf, the story of Nabi Yusuf, is an example of how a Muslim lives in an un-Islamic or non-Muslim society. You never sacrifice anything. And inshallah, we'll continue. Now, in this, now that Nabi Yusuf is living in a foreign society, what did he do? He displayed the akhlaq of a Muslim. This is why men and women alike fell in love with him, his akhlaq. Yes, he was a handsome man, but it was his akhlaq that made the people fall in love with him, men and women alike. So what does he tell you? Let's change it. Being followers of Ahlul Bayt in an un-Islamic society, our akhlaq should make the non-Muslims fall in love with us. We don't bring our morals down to them. We encourage them to bring their morals up to us. And this is a big lesson that many miss in the story of Nabi Yusuf. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. Also, as a child, Nabi Yusuf showed us that we must, in every situation, whether we're alone in a well or we are amongst other individuals, that we are the best representation of our ideology. These are lessons to be learned in this tale. This is why it's one of the best narrations. This is why it's one of the best narrations. This is why tonight we're looking at things with what? Islamic vision. Islamic vision. This is important. Now, also, these young handsome brothers we have, the story of Nabi Yusuf tells you what you do when you're a handsome Muslim and it's a society where there's beautiful women who are after you. Every turn, there's a beautiful woman, whether you're at the light in your car, or you're at school in the class, or you're at college. There are non-Muslim women with morals and manners that are not Islamic, and they are after you, trying to corrupt you. Nabi Yusuf explains to you or shows you what you do. Whenever he was caught in the presence of Zuleika or any other woman, he lowered his gaze, and he did not want to be there, and his words were what? Short and sweet. No handsome dialogue, smooth, fluid words, and trying to be, you know, smooth guy. He wasn't concerned about hurting their feelings. He was concerned about hurting Allah's feelings. Listen, you have a Muslim in a non-Muslim society, a handsome Muslim in a non-Muslim society with the beautiful, disbelieving women after him. Because guess what? That akhlaq is even more attractive than his handsomeness. Because he stands out from the rest. Was this learned? Everyone watched the movie. Did we pick this up? I'm asking questions that are not to be answered, that are to be pondered over in the mind. He's teaching us, showing us, this is what you do when you live in a non-Muslim society and the ladies are on you. You flee. And if you're in a situation where you can't move, you lower your gaze and deal with them concisely with the utmost respect so we don't give them a bad view of us, but we let them know we fear Allah. Because there's a cause and effect here. If you do things right, there's things that are going to happen to these same women. If you do things wrong, then obviously there's some other things that can happen to these same women. And this is something that is applicable right now. Right now. Many of us are going to go back, put in the DVD of Nabi Yusuf and watch it again with a pad and paper and look at it with a whole different mindset and say, wow, I missed that. I remember a brother gave me a book way back. I was a Sunni then, and I read it. I was like, man, this book is great. He said, what did you get from it? I was like, he had nice clothes. He's like, that's all you got from it? I gave you this deep book with all these deep, intricate, you know, beneficial wisdoms, and all you got was this, you know, trivial point. In many cases, we do this with Quran. And these deep stories, and all of the stories of the Anbiya can be broke down and be applied today. Every story. Every story. Salawat ala Muhammadin wa ala Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. So the story of Nabi Yusuf teaches the Muslim men how to deal with women who are not related to them and who are intent on corrupting us. Nabi Yusuf, the story of Nabi Yusuf teaches us what to do. We know what to do when we watch this. On the flip side, even if a corrupt and you know, if we deal with them in the proper manner, even these same corrupted irreligious women, if we do the right things, they will become believing women. Because guess what? I mentioned last night to some of the teens that if you deal with these disbelieving women in the right manner, for example, under normal situations, if a beautiful woman is on a kafir man, he's going to take advantage of that. Yes. Got it. But a believing man will show the utmost akhlaq, the utmost morals and manners and fear of Allah, that he will respectfully say, listen, I understand that you're attracted to me. And to be truthful, you're not that bad looking yourself, but I am Muslim. And we cannot engage in the normal things that you like. Now, we have things that we can deal with. I don't have time for this right now. I'm in between class, but, you know, I cannot touch you. I cannot pat you on the back. I cannot do these things. And if it's said in the right way, she will not be upset. She will be like, wow, he must be from Mars. He is different than all these other losers. All these other losers are quick to take advantage of me, try to manipulate me and use me to their benefit. But this guy was different. You know what? And she goes back to her girlfriends and say, you know what? I was on this guy that was pressuring him. He backed up. He was like, I can't touch you and this and that. And he said, you know, we could meet in a coffee shop or talk or this and that. But he was so respectful, you know, please forgive me. I mean, don't be mad at me, Susan, Mary and the other ones. But I'm going to go to find out a center or go online and find out about this Islam thing, because this guy was the first good. I didn't think there was any good men on this planet. Think about this. Every situation we are in is a test. Every situation, not some of them. Every situation. And Nabi Yusuf, the story of Nabi Yusuf, is applicable right now because he teaches us how to deal with women that are on you. And if you follow your religion and do not sacrifice it, inshallah ta'ala, those same women will become mu'minat. Which is the goal? You know, how would, you know, if you think every woman was born a believer, no. Just think, for many people have this thing about being born Muslim, which is an honor. But understand this, most of the chief Sahaba of Rasulullah were reverts. They were following something else and reverted to Islam. Zulaika was a revert. And what was the cause of her reversion? When she saw that she could not corrupt Yusuf, and she saw that all of the things that she disliked about him were actually honorable qualities. Think about it. All from the story of Nabi Yusuf. Salawat ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. From another perspective, this tale teaches us whether you are a disbelieving woman, you can become a believing woman, and not just mediocre, you could become high ranking. Zulaika did not just become a mediocre mu'minat. She became one of the elite. Even if you are a Muslim and you've been playing with the deen a little bit, you yourself can also, if you put in the effort, become elite. Who likes to be mediocre anything? Who wants to be so-so anything? We should be trying to be the best at everything we do, and specifically mu'min and mu'minat. We should be trying to be the best at that, just like we try to be the best doctor, lawyer, or whatever else. That should be at the top of the list, best mu'min and mu'minat. Zulaika, who was one of the worst women, she was a rotten woman for most of her life, and she was well into old age, rotten to the core. And through her sincerity, she became quickly one of the elite. Think about this. Think about this. These are some underlying aspects of the story of Nabi Yusuf. Because if he was a Muslim in a non-Muslim society, then he had his hand in guiding to the truth through this example. And if we as Shia were doing what we were doing, yes, there would be more of us. With the minority, we're always going to be the minority, but there would be more of us. And more specifically, more righteous amongst us. Think about this. Nabi Yusuf didn't say, well, listen, I'm mu'min. I don't care about the rest of Egypt. Do what you're going to do. I'm just going to go in my room at night, close the door, put the screens down, and do my ibadat, and I don't want nobody to see. No. He went out and threw his akhlaq, his morals and manners. And guess what? This is the same thing Imam Sadiq alayhi salatu wasalam. This is the same thing that the Imam told his chief companions, his students. No, his companions weren't students of Ayatollah this or Ayatollah that. They weren't students of Maulana this or Maulana that. Imam Sadiq's students were students of Imam Sadiq directly. He gave them the thumbs up. And he told his students, who many of them, you know, if you put all of us together concerning our faith, cannot match up to even some of these students who weren't masoom, as far as Iman and Ibad, that he told them, go out and propagate my teachings by not using your mouth at all, by using your akhlaq and adab. And this is what Nabi Yusuf did as a child. So anyone who thinks, oh, I'll do that when I become 40. Oh, I'll do that when I become 30. Oh, I'll do that when I become 25. No, my little brothers and sisters. Nabi Yusuf did it as soon as he started thinking for himself. Even as a child, he stood out amongst the rest. Think about this. Even as a child, Nabi Yusuf stood out amongst the rest. So it doesn't mean, well, I'll wait till I become 20 or 25. No, right now. Not now, right now. Salawat ala Muhammad and wali Muhammad. Now, obviously, my name is Yusuf, and it was given to me for a reason. And Nabi Yusuf's story has a lot relating to me, because Nabi Yusuf also tells you about what happens to people that have gone to prison. Nabi Yusuf did not go to prison because he did a crime. He went to prison because he obeyed Allah. And many of the a'imma have went to prison, not for any crime, because they were steadfast in their obedience to Allah. Nonetheless, they were in the prison. And even in the prison, Nabi Yusuf, you know, there's a saying, a strong mu'minat is a strong mu'min and mu'minat wherever they are. Whether they're in prison, whether in Pakistan, whether in America, whether they're in Iran, wherever they are strong and they represent their doctrine. Nabi Yusuf, when he was free in Egypt, roaming around doing his business, he was the best example. And locked in a dungeon, he also was the best example. And he did not make any excuse, well, I'm in prison so I can do haram. He still maintained his religion and not sacrificed it for the least. And then what happened? Many of those rotten men, many of those ruthless men, many of those corrupt men followed and took advantage of this guidance. And as a result, became the leaders of the society following their leader, Nabi Yusuf. Just think, when he had the Aziz free those people from the prison, he just didn't free them. They became the leaders of society. And here's the thing. If you can be a good mu'min in prison, and nowadays you can wind up in prison for anything. Run too many stoplights, you're going to prison. You know, have the wrong name or a beard too long or say something aggressive, you might get thrown in Guantanamo Bay for no reason at all. You understand? For no reason whatsoever, you can wind up and then they let you go 2 years later and say, oh, we made a mistake. So you can wind up there for just being mu'min or mu'minat. But nonetheless, the story of Nabi Yusuf tells you, do not look down on anyone who may have a history that he's gone to prison. And it shows you that even amongst the worst and the worst, a believer will still uphold his beliefs and his doctrine and be a light for others, because Nabi Yusuf, he guided almost everyone in that prison. Did he zap them with a miracle? Did he make a dua for Allah to touch their hearts? No. He used his good adab, his good akhlaq, and he showed these people about Allah. And many of them, just like in our society, take use of this and also become leaders of society. And the one advantage of the prisoner, because he went to prison because he was not afraid to do things. He wasn't scared to do it. Now you take that bravery compiled with knowledge and wisdom. He is not scared to speak the truth, even in hostile territory, and even if people may not like it. In our society, we have two extremes. We have the Mujahideen, who are very, very brave, may lack knowledge. We have the Muraja, who are very, very knowledgeable, many lack courage. The Ahlul Bayt was the perfect marriage. Imam Ali was the best scholar and the most severe and brutal warrior for the fi sabilillah. He was the perfect marriage, and all of the imams were that perfect marriage. So many of the prisoners that were with Nabi Yusuf, they already had bravery. They already were brave men. And then Allah gave them wisdom to couple with that bravery and gave them, you think it's easy to propagate truth in hostile territory? Even if the hostile territory is your own center, it takes bravery. So these are some underlying lessons that we learn from what? The story of Nabi Yusuf. Now you understand why Allah would take certain people that we frown upon. Why does Allah take these low people, these people from the ghettos, these people that don't have wealth, these people that live rough lives, and take them and make them leaders of society as an example? And did he start doing it, you know, at the Imam Ali Seminary last year? No, Allah's been doing this for centuries and centuries and centuries, but we have not caught the message. And the imams who have spent time in prison have also had this effect on prisoners. But this is some of the applicable aspects of the story of Nabi Yusuf for right now. For right now. Salawat if it's the truth. And obviously, one great aspect amongst the many great aspects of the story of Nabi Yusuf is the display of sabr. Many people think sabr is just sit on your hands and wait. No, it means to endure, to persevere. Sabr means that, for example of sabr, you'll propagate the truth even if people are trying to kill you, even if people start disliking you. You will endure everything that comes as a result of your being steadfast. Just think, on Ashura in Karbala, Imam Hussein, alayhi salatu wasalam, was displaying sabr. We know that. He was fighting. You're like, okay, he was in battle, but he was displaying sabr, meaning he was steadfast and determined against the batil, the falsehood. And Nabi Yusuf also, he had a big trial, because he was facing a whole community. You know, the Islamic community during the time of Hussein wasn't as big as Nabi Yusuf's community. Egypt was huge in its surrounding areas and all its people, and Nabi Yusuf single-handedly also took this on. And he was battling this from childhood. Think about it. And he was displaying sabr in almost every aspect from childhood. So this is also a lesson of sabr. This story. Now, another thing which is very beneficial is Nabi Yusuf teaches us about ghaibat, occultation. Many of us think that Imam Zaman, ajallallahu ta'ala farajahu sharif, he's invisible, walking around, you know, like the movie The Invisible Man. He's invisible, moving around amongst you. You just feel wind going, and that's... No, it means you do not recognize him. Nabi Yusuf was an occultation in Egypt. He was amongst the people, but did they know he was Nabi? No, he was an occultation. He was amongst the people, but the people of Egypt did not recognize him for his position. To them, he was just another child who happened to have good manners. In many cases, when you go to Hajj or you go to Ziyarat, if you were had bad akhlaq and bumped somebody out of the way, it could have been the imam. If you were on Hajj and you were aggressive and mean and had bad akhlaq and pushed someone, it could have been imam, because yes, he does ziyarat regularly. Yes, he goes to Hajj every year. You just don't know who he is. You know what type of clothes he wears, because he wears clothes like this. We do know. He's not wearing Tommy Hilfiger or the Walmart this or, you know, Calvin Klein or whatever. He's not wearing that. He's wearing Islamic clothes. He gives his money to the Islamic cause. Little subtlety there. He gives his money to Muslims only, not to Kufar, who will kill us with the same money. We spend a lot of money on clothes and we give it to the Kufar to use against us. Don't let that go over your head. Salawat Ali Muhammad and Wali Muhammad. But nonetheless, Nabi Yusuf was in occultation for many, many years. He was in occultation from his father, and he wasn't far from his father. Allah kept them apart. Allah kept them apart, and they weren't very, very far from each other. But the main thing is that amongst the people, Nabi Yusuf teaches us about Ghaiba, the occultation. And this relates to our imam, because yes, he does walk around, but you don't recognize him. He is amongst the people, and you may have been disrespectful to him. He may have shown you some kindness. He may have given you some words of wisdom, and you thought he was just a kind old man. But this is an example of the Ghaibat, so you have a better understanding of the occultation. We will not recognize our imam until Allah wants us to recognize our imam. Just like the people of Egypt did not recognize Nabi Yusuf as Nabi until Allah wanted them to recognize Nabi Yusuf as Nabi, until Allah gave Nabi Yusuf the command, now tell them who you are, and also Allah will give the command, now tell them who you are, imam. Salawat Ali Muhammad and Wali Muhammad. So this is another underlying lesson of the story of Nabi Yusuf. It teaches us about our imam, about the ghaibat of our imam. Now, what is more present tense than the ghaibat of our imam? Now, also, Zulaykha was a very old woman when she was commanded, when Nabi Yusuf was commanded by Allah to marry her. She was well into old age. She was blind. She was, you know, she was old. She was like a prune, so to speak. She was very old. All of her beauty, I mean, she was the top of the line beauty, you know, and then she became old. So this is also an underlying thing. All of you who think you're better because of your handsomeness or your beauty, that will fade, or an accident can alter that. So don't think of that and use that as a means of arrogance or conceitedness, because that can go away quickly or slowly. But nonetheless, Zulaykha was very old. And what did Allah do? This was one of the miracles of proof of Nabi Yusuf's truthfulness. And now understand this. Nabi Yusuf did not use miracles dealing with the people. Our a'imma did not use miracles dealing with the people. They dealt with droughts just like the people did. Nabi Yusuf dealt with droughts just like the people did. Nabi Yusuf only used miracles to prove that he was who he was, as far as he was truly the representative of Allah. He was truly the Hujjat of Allah. He was truly the Wali Allah. Just like that, the Imams also only used miracles to also prove the truthfulness of their imamate. They only did miracles to prove that they were truly who they were. So this is also underlying lessons from the story of who? Nabi Yusuf. Nabi Yusuf only did miracles to prove when he professed his claim, Allah only allowed him to do these miracles to show that he was truthful in it. The Imams only did their miracles to also show the truthfulness of their claim. They didn't just do miracles to, you know, for any whim or someone said, show me a miracle. They didn't do miracles like that. So this is also a very important, amongst other very important aspects that are applicable right now concerning our relationship with our imams or the imams in general. Because many people look at the a'imma and say, you know, well, should, you know, you have the akhlaq of Ahlul Bayt. Oh, they're masoom. What does a good akhlaq have to do with having the great names of Allah and doing miracles? What does it have to do with one another? Having good akhlaq is doable for everyone. Having sabr is doable for everyone. Think about it. It's doable. Now, where we fall short is the other aspects of, you know, we fall short in proving our claim. You know, but these are very important aspects that in many cases have been missed from the stories of Quran. Because like I mentioned from the beginning, oh, these are just ancient tales, have nothing to do with right now. Well, listen, you know, we're going to have a council meeting or a board meeting, you know, let's bring the Quran. What, the Quran has nothing to do with right now, says who? Says who? Oh, well, there's an issue with the husband and wife. Well, listen, what does the Quran say about it? The Quran is old. It has nothing to do with right now. Says who? Says who? This is wrong information. And if you didn't know, inshallah, you know it now. As I've always said, now continue to say, it has nothing to, forget what happened yesterday or before, you know, 45 minutes ago. Now let's look at things differently. Now let's look at things differently. Now, there's another aspect that is very important from the story of Nabi Yusuf. If you look at one of the worldly goals of Nabi Yusuf, and meaning not worldly for him, but one of the things that he attempted to do was to do what? Close the gap between the poor and the rich. This was his number one on the list of his to-do list for the sake of Allah. To close the gap between the poor and the rich, which he did close and which Shaitan helped to make even further apart than it was back then. Whenever a poor person does not have his or her needs, it was because a rich person did not fulfill the right with the sustenance that Allah has made them trustee of. Not the wealth that you think that you gathered with your own hands or your business acumen. No, because wealth has nothing to do with your business acumen. Many great businessmen are struggling because Allah wants them to struggle. Many not so good businessmen are very wealthy because Allah wants them to be wealthy. And there are various different reasons for the situation depending on your relationship with Allah. But nonetheless, when a poor person does not have what he needs, someone did not fulfill their right, and yes, you will deal with it on Yawmul Qiyamah. Imam Ali, alayhi salatu wassalam, he would send the Hassanain out, alayhi salam, he would send them out to gauge the community without asking anyone. You don't have to ask. You can look and see who's in need. He would have them go look in the community, see who's in need so he could make them priority. Think about these underlying things in the story of Nabi Yusuf that are applicable right now. He spent most of his life closing this gap by the command of who? I can't hear you. One more time. It was by Allah's command. Allah commanded him, now follow these methods to close the gap between the rich and the poor. Everyone in the community doesn't have a Benz. There are some people in the community, their lights may be getting cut off. There are some people in the community that their bills and their income has now gotten uneven. Their income is falling behind. They're not poor, but their income is falling behind the bills in this, you know, this time right now in society. The money that you have is not yours. Allah provided it. Allah gives, he gives wealth to whom he wills and he straightens it. He restricts it from whom he wills. Sometimes he gives wealth to make your deen better, and sometimes he takes wealth away from you to make your deen better. In the time of Nabi Yusuf, taking the wealth away from some of these people made their religion better. Because many of us, there's a hadith of Rasulullah where a man asked Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi wa sallam, he said, "Ya Rasulullah, pray to Allah to make me wealthy." And Rasulullah said no. And Rasulullah did not say no many occasions. If he did, there was a good reason for it. I cannot do that. Or I do not want to do that. Or no. But it wasn't done. And the man went away dejected. Again, another time he asked Rasulullah again to pray to Allah. Because if he prays to Allah for him to be wealthy, he is going to become wealthy. Period. He's going to become wealthy. Rasulullah again said no. I'm paraphrasing. The man came to Rasulullah again and said, "Rasulullah, please pray to Allah for me to be wealthy." And Rasulullah then explained to him, "Listen, if I pray for Allah to make you wealthy, it would not be to your benefit. You cannot handle the wealth. You will abandon the religion." "No, Rasulullah, no, I won't. I have this wealth and I do all sorts of good for the community." Sounds familiar? Rasulullah made the dua. The man became wealthy. First order of business, move the family away from the center. First thing he did with his wealth was move. In the beginning, everyone moved to the society. They moved to where the center was. When they got the wealth, this brother got his wealth, and first order of business, move away from the center. Next order of business, now he has more wealth. Now khums and zakat is like a punishment. Oh my, here they come again with khums and zakat. Knocking on my door for khums and zakat again. Now it became a punishment. Now it became a punishment. And the end of the story, you know what happened. He became a kufar. He became a disbeliever. Nabi Yusuf, the majority of his time was spent closing the gap or being given an example of how the relationship between the rich and the poor should be. And many people have this notion that I am rich, so Allah has blessed me. Rasulullah said many times, O Allah, make me live with the poor and die with the poor and be with the poor in Jannat, because there is no poor in Jannat. Matter of fact, Rasulullah has said that being poor is a gift from Allah, and he only gives it to his selected choice individuals. All of the a'immah, all the khums came through them, they were inclined to being poor. All of the Nabi, all of the Anbiya were inclined to being poor. And Rasulullah, many of you know, Archangel Jibril came to him and said, if you desire, Allah will give you valleys of gold at your disposal, and it will not lower your status. And Rasulullah declined every time. Rasulullah often tied a rock to his stomach because he did not eat regularly. In many cases, when someone came for kindness from Rasulullah, he did not have it, so he sent him to someone who was wealthy of the community to get it. So anyone, first of all, your wealth is a gift, is a trust to you from Allah. Fulfill your rights concerning it. Two, beware, because Allah says, Rasulullah has said, sometimes Allah afflicts you. Is affliction a good word or a not so good word? Right. The hadith says, sometimes Allah can afflict you with wealth, and sometimes Allah will afflict you with poverty, depending on your relationship with him. Nonetheless, the story of Nabi Yusuf is an example of the gap between the rich and poor needs to be lessened, if not closed. This is important. He spent most of his life with this specific mission alone. Now, in closing, as I wind down, another aspect of Nabi Yusuf, which is very important, and that, you know, obviously, truth be told, when you give a lecture, very few little of it is taken in. Everyone may take bits and pieces that they find that comes to their aql, their intellect, but most of it is gone. But I want you to leave with this. Nabi Yusuf, from day one, had an uphill battle. The odds were stacked against him. His trials and tribulations were extreme, the highest level. One underlying lesson in the story of Nabi Yusuf is that Islam will win. Nabi Yusuf had all sorts of enemies, rich enemies, powerful enemies, influential enemies. Just like we have rich enemies, powerful enemies, and influential enemies. And Nabi Yusuf, who was the Wali Allah at that time, the Hujjat of Allah, the representative of Islam, was victorious. And we too will be victorious. Now, obviously, one of the big aspects is Zulaikha, how she became one of the elite women of all times. Obviously, not like certain other women, but she was such a high level that Allah made her young again. Allah, I mean, she went from kufr to like high level of iman, like Salman Farisi. Went from one thing to the next and went to the high levels. Now, when we speak about great women, obviously, we have to speak about the greatest of them. Bibi Fatima Az-Zahra, salamu allahi alayha. the life, which was short of Bibi Fatima, her life was full of action. From day one, look how she raised her children. From day one, look how she preferred others to herself and her family. Look at how whenever there was a wrong done to her family or specifically or her husband, she in many cases took the lead to establish right. Whenever there was a falsehood that faced her, she, with the bravery and courage of Ahlul Bayt that she inherited from her father, Rasulullah, she faced every falsehood with the utmost sabr and determination. Look at this example that she has given us. What did she do? What did she say? She said in some hadiths that, I have gone through all this so that my father's religion can be practiced. Now, would I like to be around Lady Fatima to benefit from her? Yes. Am I sad that she was martyred in such a horrible way? She was oppressed by certain individuals? Yes. But what makes me most sad is what we've done to her father's religion. This is what makes me the saddest, because she is aware, she is witness, she gets the news of everything that we do, or everything that we've done and continue to do, and how we misrepresent and do not practice the way it was intended, the religion that she was martyred for. This is what I really want you to think about. This is what I really want to make you cry. The fact that she is aware that we have a place with ibadat that was come down from Ahlul Bayt and replaced it with other things. In many cases, we will come to a majlis for Lady Fatima and put the hijab on in the car, in the parking lot. And it's sad because do you think she knows about this? Do you think this news is hidden from her? Do you think that those who were killed in the way of Allah don't know what's going on? She gets the news every Thursday. This is what makes me the saddest. This is what makes me the saddest. Muhsin was aborted by Bibi Fatima being slammed behind a door. Her father had died not more than 6 or 7 months prior, and her house was being threatened to be put on fire. The door was set ablaze. She witnessed her husband being dragged out of her house, the Wali Allah, the Hujjat of Allah, being dragged out of the house with a rope around his neck. All of this tragedy, so that the religion of Islam, the doctrine of Ahlul Bayt, can remain in practice, and we won't practice it. And we won't practice it. Who do you think is crying more, us tonight or Fatima to Zahra, salamullahi alayha, every night when she knows how empty the centers are where her religion is to be practiced? When it is made to her the news of who comes to the door, who comes through the door to the center every night or regularly, she gets the news. If you don't think this is true, it is. Allah says, do not think that those who are killed in the way of Allah are dead. They are alive. And they're receiving more than just provisions. They are receiving news. Bibi Fatima wants more than your tears. She wants the change of your hearts. This is what she really wants. She doesn't want you to bang your head until you become unconscious or bang your chest till it turns black and blue. She wants you to practice the religion that she was martyred for. She wants you to abandon the culture that her father destroyed and replace it with her culture, the culture of Islam. This is what she wants from you. This is what she wants from you. If you thought it was your tears, you're wrong. She wants that, and she wants that also along with that which I mentioned just now. This is what Bibi Fatima wants. Now it's up to you on whether you give it to her or not. We ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala for the blessings and tawfiq to be on the right path, for the wisdom to understand his guidance, to hasten the reappearance of our imam, to make us his helper when he comes.